listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Lizzie Eldridge, the author of Duende and Vandalism. Lizzie, how long have you actually been writing?
I've been writing all my life, I have to say that. When I was a child, I started writing at a very early age. I used to write a lot of poetry, short stories. I was always writing.
Have you kept all of that work for possible use or to refer back to?
My childhood writing, yeah, definitely. It's in boxes in my flat. I haven't looked at it for a long time, but it's there. It's all there in boxes, yeah.
So how did you go about choosing your first novel? How did you decide that was the one that was going to be published? You're going to take that further.
Okay, so there are two novels. One is Vandalism, which was published by Merlin last October, and one is Duende, which was self-published on Amazon at as a second edition in 2014. Vandalism is actually my first novel.
Okay,
so it was the first to be written, but the second to be published. And I started writing that quite a long time ago, and that writing came out of a really difficult, painful, quite traumatic period in my life. And the writing was kind of a vital thing to do. I mean, I was always writing anyway, and then this novel just came out and I kept writing. And in a way, the writing was a means of getting through a situation, not directly related to the plot, but it was certainly a way of getting through a situation in my own life that I needed to get through. So that was the first novel to be written. The second one was Duende, so that was the second one to be written. And I started writing that at the end of 2009, and it was triggered by a very surreal 5 days in Madrid. I've always felt a very strong connection actually with Spain, and I've always loved the work of the Spanish writer Federico García Lorca. And the novel is called Duende. Duende is a key image in Lorca's work and his kind of theory about art and creativity. And the story sort of just found itself. It's set in the period leading up to the Spanish Civil War in Spain, and the connections that came through during the writing process between my fictional characters and the actual reality of Spain at that time was incredible. It was a really incredible journey for me, for the characters. It was a really beautiful process.
So did you imagine the story from start to finish before you started to write?
No, I don't have any. With both novels, I never have a structure. I never sit down and write some kind of plan. I never know where the story will go. I have no idea where it'll end. So it really is, I mean, when I said it was a journey, it is a journey. It's a journey in terms of the actual writing process, the process of discovery and so on. I like the feeling of discovering my characters, growing with them, developing with them, moving with them. Rather, I mean, I just can't pre-plan. I've never pre-planned. You know, I just don't work like that.
Do your characters have elements of yourself in, or perhaps people you know that, or bits that you'd like to have in your character, or bits you don't like that are in your character? How do you create a character?
I think always you draw on your own experience. What else have you got to draw on? I don't write kind of fantasy, so I don't go into that kind of mode where I've got to imagine fictional, mad fictional worlds. I think aspects of your own character and other people's that you know necessarily come in and influence. For example, with Duende, there are two main characters, both of them men, gay men. One is Nayo, who's an artist, and the other is Jose, who's a philosopher. And I discovered in the writing, because to begin with, Nayo was the first character to appear. I was very in love with him, you know, he's this little precious thing. And then I discovered as I was writing that the other character, Jose, was becoming more and more like me, possibly because I have an academic background. So I think that kind of fueled him. And I had to pull back a little bit because I didn't want to create, you know, a homosexual man a la Lizzie Eldridge. I wanted him to breathe and live on his own, and he does. But I was aware that there were elements of me that were going into his character, more particularly.
When you were writing the book, did you, you know, this is going to sound a bit crazy, but do you have conversations with them as you're going along? Do you talk to your characters in a, even if it's only head chatter, do you have a relationship with them while you're building so that you can see what their reaction would be to your provocations?
Definitely. I mean, The writing of Duende took me about a year and a half, so it was actually quite quick. It was very much a gush of writing. And in that process, these characters, and they still are, they became living flesh and blood beings, you know, to me. They were, I sound a bit like I'm insane, but, you know, it's not that process. To me, they became very real characters. And the strangest thing that happened, just to re-emphasize this, there's an incredible biography of Lorca, written by a guy called Ian Gibson, who, I mean, he took his family, he did this research, he poured his life and soul into finding out more about this writer. And it's a big biography, and I bought it during the writing, quite early in the writing, but, you know, during the writing of Duende, I thought I need it to get some information and to know some factual details. One day, I was flicking through this book, because I didn't read it from start to end, because it's too big. I was flicking through this book, and there it was, in front of me. It said, in, I think it was 1931, Lorca met and became friends with an artist from Andalusia, whose name was José Caballero. I stared at this because my character is also José Caballero.
Okay.
Now, this guy, I know, this was not the only coincidence that happened, but I stared at this. José is actually a philosopher, not an artist. His partner, Nio, is the artist. But there it was. Lorca became friends with a guy called José Caballero. The other strange thing was, my characters are friends with Lorca in the novel, not on a day-to-day basis, but they have a friendship. And it was always José who was closer to Lorca in my novel already. So I was like, oh, okay, something's going on here with the universe. It's sending stuff. So that's incredible.
So when you started writing, you said it took you a year and a half. You were teaching at universities in the UK at that time,
No, this was when I came to Malta.
Okay.
Yes. No, this was at the end of 2009.
Right.
So by that time, I'd been living in Malta for just over a year, nearly 2 years. And I was teaching some English at the time, teaching some drama as well. But at that time, too, I didn't have very much work, which was not so great from the point of view of your finances. But it was at the same time when I was discovering this novel. So actually, it was a really... I mean, it was a very creative period, and I had the time for the creativity to come out. So the kind of instigation of the novel corresponded with a slight dearth of work, but it gave me this incentive to be writing every single day. And I continued, actually, even when I did start picking up work again a couple of months later. You know, that kind of need, that compulsion to write never stopped.
Do you write literally wherever you are, or do you have to be sat in an office or on your sofa? Do you have a routine?
I usually write at home with my computer. That's how I do it now. But if you get ideas or images that come to you, I always have some kind of piece of paper or notebook in my bag. So there's always like, you know, if you come up, you think of a line or an image or something, you can scribble it down. But the actual bulk of the writing I do in my home, in front of my computer.
And are you very sort of methodical? Now I'm writing until five, or you write until he stops talking to you or they stop talking to you?
I wish I could say I was methodical, but I'm not really in any sense at all in my life.
You're artistic
all.
And creative.
I don't, well, with Duende, there was this compulsion to write. So it was, you know, it wasn't a case of I need to set a time limit. It was I need to write. And however much time it takes, okay, I need to go to bed because tomorrow I need to get up at 6 a.m. because I need to work. It was that kind of process. Now I'm working on something which may or may not come to anything. And I'm trying to be a little more disciplined because I don't have so much time now. I'm working quite a lot of hours in the average week. So I need to kind of be a bit more structured and say, okay, it's not just about waiting for that, whatever it is, you know, the ideas to just fall into your lap and... It has to be a little more, open that document and do some work on it, even if it's only a paragraph. So at least you can say, tonight you did something on that, because I have less time.
So would you like to read us an excerpt of Duende first and tell us a little bit in context about the piece that you're going to read?
Okay. The piece comes not halfway through the book, but more or less. And what I've chosen is a piece that shows both the main characters, Nio and José. As I said, Nio is an artist, José is a philosopher. They are gay men, and they've been together since the age of 14. So they've grown and they've developed together. the story is very much about their lives together as, I mean, the fact that the homosexual is important because in Spain at that time it was illegal, you know, and you just couldn't come out to your family, it was, you just couldn't. What happens in the novel is the two characters grow together as human beings, and they also grow together as an artist and a philosopher. So their work kind of comes together very much. Their work, their ideas, their thinking, the landscape of Spain, which was really brutal at that time politically and socially and economically. So what I've tried to do is choose an extract that kind of shows the way in which they think and work together.
Excellent.
Okay. It was the fundamental conflicts José thrived on, and Freud seemed to spell this out. Eros, the god of love, encapsulating the quest for immortality, the life force, propelling our creativity, versus the compulsion for self-destruction, aggression, and sadistic cruelty. The drive for pleasure confronted by its opposite, which José conceived as Thanatos, the god of death. The demand for love and creativity, and its concomitant insistence that temples be torn down. Again, he treated this personally. Eros governed his principles. Thanatos was there in the background, waiting to undo beauty. Thanatos had ruled the bullring that fateful day, but it was a force he could live without. Pleasure wasn't a dichotomy, but a living in and living through. How could such a simple thing as pleasure be construed as conflict? How could delight be anything other than what it is? And what exactly are the sins of the light, thought Nio? Does mourning make us less innocent? Does a candle illuminate our crimes? Are we all guilty or deluded or misguided? And who calls us to account if indeed we deserve this? Like José, Nio could never simply accept what he read or heard. He needed to play around with ideas before coming to his own point of view. The sins of the light was an image that haunted him, but it was only when he began to paint that he truly understood. He painted bodies. He painted architecture. He painted faces in windows, but they no longer looked like faces. A flicker or a shadow or a momentary glance. He painted dark hiding places made visible through their depiction. Whatever loitered in the shade could never linger alone for long. And the frozen sky was broken by a flash of light, which was neither inspiration nor condemnation. Simply an acknowledgement that whatever are all too human actions, a higher power perceives it all. Something above us and beyond us. A force designed to comment when we trespass, but which always also leads us back to where we need to be.
Thank you. So that was an excerpt from Duende, your first published novel, but not your first novel.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you have published a second edition.
Yeah.
Why do people publish second editions?
Well, for me, it was kind of by chance. Originally, at the end of 2011, Duende was published by a so-called independent publisher. At that time, I was very new to, I didn't know what self-publishing was. And I was pumping my book out, you know, left, right and centre to publishers and everybody, and please publish it. And this independent publishing company said yes. And basically what they did, but I didn't know it at the time, was they used Amazon and CreateSpace, which is the two things that people can now publish on, to publish my novel on my behalf, which you can actually do by yourself. It wasn't as if any money exchanged hands, because it didn't, so I hadn't lost financially. But a couple of years later, in 2014, at the beginning, I realised that there was no contact from these people. Originally, I'd got some royalties, very minimal, I hasten to add, but anyway. But there was no contact, there was no royalties, there was no royalty report. And I had a real struggle getting in contact with them. Eventually, I did, and I said, just give me my novel back, give it back to me. It belongs to me, the copyright's mine, give it back. So they immediately withdrew it from Amazon in a rather abrupt way, and I was left with this book, and I was feeling kind of really sad because I loved this book, you know. And at the same time, Merlin Publishers were saying, we want to publish your other novel, Vandalism. I was delighted, really delighted, and I am. At the same time, it was my emotions were like, what about Duende? You know what's going to happen? So I ended up deciding I would self-publish it, you know. I had a friend in the UK, we were at school together, computer guy. He helped me with the formatting, I was very lucky because the Maltese artist Damien Abeya, I contacted him, I'd seen his work. Can I use one of your paintings possibly on the cover? He very, very kindly agreed. So that was how, and then I reworked the original manuscript because I realised that my characters seemed to pause a lot in the first edition. I thought, they're always pausing, why are they pausing? So it was a case of editing and, you know, just kind of honing the text, making a couple of changes. And then I felt very much, when it was published in October 2014 as a second edition, it was very much my book, you know, and that was a really nice feeling.
Excellent. If you've just joined us, you're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Lizzie Eldridge, the author of Duende and Vandalism. The Vandalism was written a long time ago, you said, when you actually still lived in Scotland?
Yeah. It was actually begun in Wales, because I used to teach in South Wales,
okay.
So it was begun there. Then I moved with all my baggage back to Glasgow, and in 2004, so we are talking a long time ago, I decided I needed to revisit this manuscript, so I took it out and I worked on it night after night after night, and then I made a few efforts to try and find a publisher at that time. I think I made about 5 or 6 efforts. I'm not very good at rejection. I know that many famous novelists say, you know, 250 rejections, but after 5, I just was like, come on, I'm bored. Then, you know, life goes on. I moved to Malta in 2008, and in the summer of 2013, I decided, get this manuscript out and rework it. And I spent the whole of that summer working on it. And what I decided, because now I was in Malta and totally outside of Scotland, I thought, okay, get rid of the kind of, I'd done some kind of dialect, you know, some of the dialogue was written sort of phonetic dialect. I thought, you may be better neutralize this a bit.
Okay.
And I changed the name of the main character as well, because again, that could have caused problems because it was kind of Scottish pronunciation. So I made some changes. And there it was again. I had Vandalism on my computer as a complete manuscript yet again. And at the beginning of 2014, I wrote to Chris Grupetta from Merlin, and I just said to him, I've got this manuscript. Do you want to just have a look and see what you think? Because I really didn't expect anything. So I sent him a couple of chapters. He said, can you send me some more? I said, okay. Still, I really wasn't expecting anything. Then he wrote back to send me the whole manuscript. I said, okay. So I did. Again, not expecting anything. Because it's, you know, it's set in Glasgow. The main character is a female. I just didn't have any expectations. Then in April 2014, he wrote to me, I want to publish this manuscript. I love it. Give it to me or I'll write bad things about you. I said, oh, okay then. So that was how that came to life in Malta, which is great because Malta very much feels like my home. You know, as soon as I came here in 2005 for a couple of weeks to make a show, I really loved Malta. And I've now been here for nearly 8.5 years and I still love Malta. So the fact that Vandalism has finally, you know, reached publication is on the book, you know, in the bookshops in Malta, the country I love and the country where I live, is a beautiful thing.
So how does it happen? What's the process? So you send off your manuscripts, publisher says yes please. What happens next? Do you lose control? Do they handhold you through the process?
No, I mean they were brilliant, really brilliant. So Chris Grupetta found me an editor, Jo Caruana, who I knew because I had taught her previously at a university in Edinburgh. It is a small world. So she was the editor and she was fantastic. There weren't a lot of changes to be made. There were a few minor things, whether it was in a street or on a street. So we had a few arguments in these very small details. So Merlin were brilliant. I mean, they were really brilliant. Jo Caruana was brilliant as an editor. Pierre Portelli designed the cover. Now, there was no, that was the point where I had no control, which is very different to Duende, where, you know, I had complete control once Damien had kindly given me his painting. So that was kind of weird because I thought, okay, I know Pierre, I know his work, I love his work. What is he going to do? What is he going to produce? the cover he eventually came up with is nothing I would ever have imagined, and I mean that in a really positive way. I'm not an artist. I can't see things as he does. And the image is just perfect. I mean, it's very striking. There's a kind of texture in there. There's a kind of beauty which is kind of getting tainted, going a bit sour. He's done a beautiful job. So that was a bit I had no control over, but I'm glad I didn't, because he's done it, you know, it's fantastic.
Justice.
Yeah.
The cover is just so important for people to physically pick it off of the bookshelves.
Absolutely. I mean, I have bought books in the past where I've just, many books where I've just seen the cover, picked it up, looked on the back, started to read, and if all of those things work, I will buy it, knowing nothing about who this author is, you know. The cover to me is really important.
So did Pierre read the story before he got to do the work? So
Yeah.
So at least you knew that bit. It wasn't just a random picture that was...
No, not at all. And I mean, I think he made a model and everything to create this cover. So he took a lot of care, you know, and I've spoken to him only once since the book came out. But, you know, he really understood the book, and he understood the kind of main ideas, themes, the atmosphere, because it's there in the cover.
And so how did it feel not self-publishing this vandalism, because you could have gone down that route at the end of the day, having had the experience with Drende. Mm-hmm. You could have self-published, had full control and carried it through. What differences have there been in the self versus having a publisher do it for you?
One of the main differences is seeing your book in a bookshop, and that it beats everything, you know. I mean, it's kind of weird, because I remember when I first walked down Republic Street and went into Agenda and saw it there, and you go, God, this is incredible. You know, this is what you've always imagined. But you can't turn to the, you know, the person in the bookshop, the assistant or whatever, you can't say, look at my book. So you just have
Why
to...
Why not?
Because it would be deeply embarrassing. I did it kind of once in Chambers, where I was going in Bay Street shopping centre, and I was like, have you got a copy of Vandalism, because I can't see it? And he said, we need to order more. And I was like, because I'm the author. I was so, but they were really nice to me, because you feel a bit kind of stupid. And it's not like, I mean, I'm also an actor. It's not like when you do a theatre performance and the audience applauds, hopefully, and you take a bow, you're just standing in a bookshop looking at your book alone. I mean, I took a friend later, because I was like, can you just come stand in the bookshop and look? And she was lovely.
Oh, I would have taken a selfie. I would have been...
Oh, no, we did go through that. Yes, we've gone down the selfie route, definitely. But not so many, actually. I need to do that again, I think.
Yeah, I think you can. What tips would you give to budding authors now that you've got a couple of books under your belt? What would you say to people who have started writing, think they've got an idea to start writing? What would you tell them the first two or three things they need to consider or do?
Well, the first thing you need to do is write, okay? There's no other way to do it. My other kind of piece of advice, I'm not sure I follow it, but try not to suffocate yourself when you're writing. So don't write something and then go back through that page or two pages or three pages and start editing it, because that actually stifles the writing process. Just keep writing. There's time for editing and changing at a later stage. Get the words on the page. If you feel a need to write, then that's fantastic, because for me, that need to write is what drives my writing forward, is what takes me back night after night to the manuscript, to the work. If I don't need to write, I won't write. So if you've got a need to write, a compulsion, then just write, and don't stop writing, and as I say, edit later. There are 500 million billion books available to buy. Now Amazon has made it even more possible for more people to be published, which makes it both good and bad, because if there's 500 million billion books, then yours is one amongst many. So don't expect, unless you're really, really lucky, to be able to live off your writing. You know, if you can find a day job or a source of income which is not just kind of pen pushing but actually fuels your creativity, then all the better. I mean, that's why I feel very lucky, because I teach English as a foreign language, and I mean, not only am I meeting fascinating and different people every single day, but language is part of writing, so I'm learning so much about language which then fuels into the writing. So if you can get a day job that connects with, if it's your evening job or your writing work, all the better, yeah.
And have you learned through acting and teaching theatre studies more about being able to write or developing characters or being able to feel a character? Has that also helped you?
For sure. And I mean, Duende kind of, in particular, I mean, both books kind of mention theatre. There's one stage in Vandalism where the two of the characters go to the theatre. Theatre is a fundamental part of my life. Duende came very much out of my love of theatre, my experience of teaching theatre, in particular, early 20th century avant-garde movements, surrealism, symbolism and so on. My love of philosophy, which is part of theatre as well. So all of this kind of came together and connected in Duende. I mean, without my academic background, as well as my kind of artistic background, I don't see how that I could have found that novel.
Okay. And just as we finish off, could you tell us what you're actually reading at the moment or any favourite books that you would like listeners to know about?
Okay, at the moment I'm reading yet another Margaret Atwood. I've totally fallen in love with her. And it's only quite recently that I've actually read any of her work. The one I'm reading at the minute is called Cat's Eyes. And like the others that I've read last year and this year, immediately she just draws you into this world. I mean, she is an immense writer. The narrative is fantastic, the characters are fantastic, the details, just, you don't want to stop reading.
Thank you to this week's guest, Lizzie Eldridge, author of Duende and Vandalism.